Welcome to Cloud Foundry Weekly, your source for all things Cloud Foundry. Today's episode, we are joined by Jake Melanch from Aqua Security and Tanzu's very own field CISO, David Zinzian. We will deep dive into the overall security story around Cloud Foundry and Tanzu Application Service and how you can make an even more hardened platform with Aqua Security. Please enjoy the show. Well, hello and welcome.
Happy Thursday, everybody. We are back for Cloud Foundry Weekly and
Another great episode. I almost got the StreamYard thing right this time. However, I forgot to uncheck the loop on the 30-second countdown. So if I threw you all for a loop out there, I'm sorry. But I'll work better next time.
We like to keep it interesting. Make you guess when we're actually going to join, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
5 seconds left. Oh, nope, 30 seconds left.
Yeah, yeah, you were getting all pumped and like jazzed and behind the scene, and then I counter started over again. So I saw you get deflated a little bit. I'm sorry about that,
Nick. That's all right. Well, so first off, let me start. I'm working remote for the next 3 weeks. So as you can see, I don't have a virtual screen back there, and the reason for that is with no green screen, it takes half my face away. So we're gonna try to fix that for the next episode, but working from an undisclosed location for the next 3 weeks. So,
yeah, it's classified. I like classified, it though. It's a pleasant background. It looks professional enough. So I think we're good there. So what is this? Is this episode?
Episode eight.
Yeah.
Season one, episode eight. We're going to be talking Aqua Security and security in today. So we're going to have some great guests. We'll bring them on in here just a second, but, you know, first off, Nick, how was the week?
It's been good. It's been busy. Lots of things going on. I'm getting more involved in this Gen AI thing behind the scenes, so learning a lot. But yeah, lots of stuff going on there, as always. Busy. How about you?
Oh, doing good. I'll just let all the audience know. So, you know, Nick always likes to scare me. He comes into the show at the last minute, but boy, he cut it close today. Fucker factor was high. I was like, oh man, he's going to make me do this the first part of the show by myself.
Yeah, I was on a call with customers, so I was like, I really got to go now. But it all worked out, hopefully, or otherwise they just think I bailed. But now we're here. So, all right, let's start bringing on our guest, do you think?
Before we go, we got one, you know, Deshaun's always with us. Hey, you know, call out to Deshaun. He asked you a question. If I'm a TAS customer, can I install the AI tile and does it require GPUs to run? Let's answer that first and then we'll get the security guys on.
Sure. Yeah. So you can join our beta program and you can get bits to our beta tile and then you can install it on your installation. Currently, we do require GPUs to run some of these models. Doing some CPU experimentation right now, there are different ways to do that, run some of these smaller models on CPU. But, you know, as in the sense of TAS and like production web services, we haven't quite yet gotten CPUs to run well enough, I guess. But yes, and Deshaun, I know you are internal to Broadcom, so I can add you to a channel and we'll get you hooked up. So, but yes, anyway, that's that.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and bring on the guest. So the first person that we're going to bring on is going to be Jake Melanch. So Jake is hold on just a second. I'm moving things around. My apologies, everyone. Make sure I can bring this up. So Jake is a senior solutions architect at Aqua Security, and he's been with them for the last 4.5 years. He attended the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth, where he received a bachelor's degree in application development. And during his free time, he likes to play rugby. He likes to snowboard and cooking on his grill. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good. How are you, Nikki?
Doing good. So cooking on the grill.
Yeah, I just recently got a Blackstone, so a nice flat top. I got the 22-inch, so I get to bring it with me to tailgate when I snowboard, bring it to rugby games, tailgate there. So
nice.
I like doing that.
You got into smoking yet?
Not yet. That's the next one. A bunch of my friends have already done that, so that's the next step up for me.
Yeah, we did the opposite. I went with the smoker first, and we're looking at getting the Blackstone next. So that's awesome.
I really enjoy the griddle lifestyle. That's for sure. But yes. Okay. So should we bring on our next guest here? I guess I'll bring him on.
Since, yep.
And I guess we have the honor of joining today, David Zenzian, who, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the like the field CISO for Tanzu, and and you have the honor of the coolest Slack handle at DMZ, which is so ironic based on your work in the security field. So,
well, it's more than Slack. It is my initials too. So
I just put that together now. So, wow. I guess I'm behind the scene on that one, but it's very, very appropriate, I guess, for what you chose in your career and what your parents named you. Yeah.
Well, and I'll go on and say, not only, are you our field CISO for VMware and Broadcom now, but you were also a founding member and CISO for a New York stealth startup, FDIC Bank. You started up, what was it, ZZ Servers, and you also run B-Sides Charleston, right? Security B-Sides.
Yeah, I've actually been involved in B-Sides as a volunteer since the very second one in Las Vegas. I didn't make the first one. I was not in town that year, but I think B-Sides is a great, it's like Cloud Foundry Weekly. The small communities thrive, and the model they built in B-Sides, it's everywhere now. It's one of those things that if I could be like Unicky and actually plan a time where I can actually work on the road, there's a whole series of conferences around, not just this country, but you could go to Canada, Mexico, go international. It's just such exciting, smart people all around the world just getting together and having lots of fun. And I think I'm going to be in the chat here. I said, so Deshaun, now you know why Aqua is here. I was the person who bribed them.
Well, and tell us a little bit more about B-Sides, because I think that's an interesting concept, right? It's a 501(c).
Well, Each B-Sides is unique and standalone. It started with the first one was in Las Vegas. It was founded by Mike Don, Chris Nickerson, and Jack Daniels. And since then, it's kind of morphed into a global open source movement. So it's one of those things where people all around the globe say, so say you're in Topeka, Kansas, and you're like, you've got 20 friends, you get together, you talk about security. It's like, well, let's have a conference. Let's get some sponsors. And it kind of started the same way. Is B-Sides started with, you have thousands of people who submit papers to Black Hat and DEF CON because those are the places to go. It's commonly called, Hacker Summer Camp every summer. So that's where you want to go. The problem is they can only take a few hundred. So there's so many people who are just great people who are going to be there anyway with presentations ready to go. So they started the idea of let's make an alternate conference, like the B-side of a tape. That's where B-sides came from. And it was the same people who are at these same conferences. And then what happened is, it's kind of like with the internet. We got this huge bubble in California. They went a burst and went around the world. It built up great momentum because of DEF CON and Black Hat. But people are around the world. And it turned into an organization that helps other organizations build these. So the B-Sides I do in Charleston, we've done it 13 years now, I think. We got to a point where we were doing about 20,000 donations every year. We'd have free lunches, free dinner. We'd have a party. We'd have free T-shirts for everybody. We had these really drunk badges, just making it fun. People even bring in ATM machines, full of money, saying if you can bring the money. So each community has one. Like the B-Sides Baltimore was this last weekend, and there's a whole bunch of people. That's like the Beltway area. So you get a bunch of the people from the federal government as well as security people in around the scene around that area. But there's a DC one that's very active. New York is great. There's Charlotte. Every major city in the world has one. What we've done in Charleston though is we made it a 501(c)(3) just to make it easier for company sponsorships, and we're actually at a point we're old enough we're considering now of creating some scholarships and actually being able to give back to the communities more too.
That's awesome. And I'll be honest, I think we could probably do a whole show just on that and the way that security is being, the way you're going through the nonprofit, helping the small towns out with security aspects. I think we've got something, we could do a whole show on that, but I do want to kind of transfer over to Jake. Jake, we brought you on to talk about Aqua Security. You've got three newer tiles that came out for TAS. So let's go ahead and let's start talking about those. We'll start with the first one. We've got the AirGap Aqua Server tile, which we'll go ahead and post the link up for that. Tell us about that, what it does, and how Aqua Security feels that this is something that customers need.
If you could throw on top of that, that was the first tile. That was the original one, which goes back.
Yeah, I was going to say that tile is not actually new. That one has been around for a couple of years. So that one's our, I guess you could say, our legacy product before we got into the SaaS model. So it's our workload protection. So basically we deploy it on-prem. It keeps our whole everything locally into the TAS environment, which includes our scanners and our enforcers, or our agent, as we call them. So basically all of the Diego cells would get one of our enforcers, and then all of the apps running on that Diego cell would then be able to benefit from the protection, but also then we're doing the monitoring across the board there. So the new tiles are actually just the enforcer and the scanner taken out of that whole management plane. So when we started offering SaaS to our customers, there was really no need to have all the additional components inside of their TAS environment. So we ripped out the two different, the daemon for the scanner and the enforcer itself. And then those are the individual tiles that we have released. And I believe we just released a new update a week ago or so, earlier this week.
So we've got the Aqua Enforcer runtime security for AI. So this is going to be application centric. Yes.
And go just ahead. When I said that up, yeah. This is not the artificial intelligence. This is application instances.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Good call out.
That's on me, because I've spent so many years getting used to the word AI before, it doesn't matter that I did AI back in the 80s in college. Sorry for confusion, folks.
No, and I've got that same problem. I've got the muscle memory. AI to me means application instance, but now with the new world and Gen AI coming in, I'm going to have to rethink the way I say things as well. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate that. You're changing everything I need to do.
I didn't start this thing. I just got on the bandwagon, let's just say. But yes, I've had that same issue for many talks now. So yes.
Yeah. All right. So runtime security for application instances. What's the benefits?
Well, especially with the new Gen AI becoming much more mainstream across all the organizations because of the massive benefits that you can get from it, there are a lot of other things that these like LLM models, when you're deploying these AI applications, have certain security guardrails in them, but there's still like some social engineering ways that you can get around those things. So that's what, at least in that use case, what our enforcers meant to do. So when we have certain cases where you might be using, like, let's just use a generic financial industry or financial institution, for example, where they have an AI LLM assistant to be able to go and basically query like a ticker runner. Like, so what is the current price for Microsoft, for instance? And basically being able to then go and use your social engineering to ask it questions. So like, what is the current price, or what is your user that you are using for the LLM application? And it says, sorry, I can't tell you that. But then if you be a little more crafty and say, write a Python script for me or execute this Python script, but you generate it for me. And it kind of just goes into like tricking the AI model to execute your code, even though it has a directive to say, don't execute code directly made from the user, but you can get around that in certain ways. So that's what our enforcers, part of what we're trying to be able to detect is when the application is doing things that you didn't necessarily intend it to do. And that's part of what we have loaded into the enforcer with behavioral signatures. So that way you don't even have to set a policy, which we do support as well, but we're able to detect based off of what we're seeing out in the threat landscape in the wild from our threat research team, which is Team Nautilus, if you guys are familiar with them. They're honeypots. They have like 80,000 attacks that they monitor every month or every quarter or something like that. And they feed all of that data right back into our product. So we're able to see exactly like what attack techniques they're trying to use, map them back to the MITRE framework to be able to then load that back to our enforcer and then be able to see those things in real time and provide that protection to not only just the new Gen AI applications, but all of your traditional cloud applications as well. So even when, if somebody was to gain unauthorized access or try to add a capability, like a new executable, for instance, certain drift like that, we'll be able to either detect or block altogether if that's where your appetite for securities is at that point. So David, I think you were going to add something.
Yeah, just kind of bridging a little bit, because I don't want to go down the AI side. I think actually both Nick and Nikki, it might be actually a really interesting, we didn't even think about the ideas of how Aqua and our security partners are actually doing things in the Gen AI world. I would love to dive into that, but on the actual regular protection though, I think maybe some tangible of what that really looks like. If you think about an application running, it's running on TAS and a Diego cell that's running the container. From the protection side though, you're looking at things, just for example, Jake, maybe just to kind of dive into it with some, you're looking at things like, what kind of network connections are going in or out of the container? What kind of things it's doing on the file system? Is it writing files? Is it reading files? Is it creating new files? What's your, I'm assuming you're taking all these honeypot analyses and going, okay, well, this attack involved injection into a Java code that's going to write this file, that's going to make this listener and do this thing. You're kind of using that to monitor the running application for those sort of things, right?
Right, yeah. And I guess I should take a step backwards because we kind of got ahead of ourselves there. But like when we're looking at installing the tile, like the enforcer tile, let's say, basically it's coming in and being the entry point to the Diego sales hall. Any processes or commands or network calls for the host itself, as well as then all the containers running on it, is what we're monitoring. So from a baseline, we'll be able to audit all of those processes. You can be able to up the number of things that we're able to actually collect if you want to see deeper forensics or if you want to see like read-only files and directories or file integrity monitoring, those types of things we have the ability to turn on. But then, of course, the additional making sure that nobody's using port scanning detection or port scanning capabilities on your applications, looking for an open port to try to connect to try to go east and west outside of that container, as well as, and of course, a lot of other things that we're looking for throughout whatever your application could be running. And we were really built and bred for container protection. That was where we started. Our initial use case at Aqua was for Docker containers back in 2015 when they first came out. And we've just really grown and evolved with the market around us as we've seen cloud native application protection platform, or CNAPP, if you're familiar with that term, evolve from workload protection, CSPM, you know, all those buzzwords of the acronyms and different things out there.
Gotcha. Man, I got a ton of questions, but you know, first off, Nick, I don't even know if these two guys need us. We should probably just bail and let them talk for the next 45 minutes. But
no, so Jake, I think I'm learning something for sure. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Jake, a couple questions for you. I'm going to start one with a very specific question towards this. So you talked about, you know, how the standalone, the air gap server, the old tile, and now you move kind of to a SaaS model. So does that mean with the new tiles, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, with the air gap server, in order to get updated, you know, threats, updated, you know, metadata for that, you had to upgrade the tile. With the new tile, is this real time? Is it reaching out to the SaaS service to bring in the new threats that are coming in? Or is there still an upgrade that's needed?
Yeah, great question. And actually, it depends. So the original tile, the air gap, if it's truly air gap, yeah, you have to download the new tile to mm-hmm. be able to get those updates. But what those updates are really getting fed to is our threat intelligence feed, which we call our cyber center, which even with our on-prem deployments for the TAS tile, as well as other on-prem previously, we still hosted that cyber center. So it was just an address that our console would go and connect to, because we update that threat intelligence feed every 6 hours. So okay. If that's a really, really high volume of having to pull down this image. And of course, if you can guess, our database is pretty big for that intelligence right. feed. And so it would take a little bit to be able to pull that down and update that in a truly air-gapped environment. So that's why we decided to host that from the beginning. Now with SaaS, you're exactly right. So the new tiles, they are just the application and the enforcer and the scanners. Everything that they're actually analyzing your applications against is in this cyber center, which again is tied to our SaaS service. So if we are running, let's say at 2 p.m. Eastern time, we are pushing a new update. Once that update is complete, you'll have those new feeds coming from either whatever we subscribe to, like the vendors or our threat research team, with any other new signatures that they've found, which actually, I think beforehand, you had mentioned something about like what they're actually, or how they're actually feeding that data in there. And one of the things that they've been able to collect from these honeypots is that 52% of the modern attack landscape is in memory. So in memory based attacks. So it's not even being written to the disk. It's not even looking for anything that you could tangibly find from a scan, which is just going to show that the importance of having a real-time runtime agent to be able to monitor applications, so that way you know exactly what's going on and you can see those things that are happening directly from memory.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And I, you know, one of the things, and we forgot, you know, this is me and Nick's fault. We forgot to ask you about your first CF push. So we'll do that at the end of the show because we completely forgot to do that. Got all excited about security. But from Aqua security standpoint, you know, you said that you kind of got your start in container based. You know, we do containers in Cloud Foundry, we do containers in Tanzu Application Service. But what made Aqua Security think that it was they wanted to get into the TAS space? Why was it a good idea for you guys to come into Cloud Foundry and offer that?
Well, it was a strategic position. So when we started going out to the market to see where our customers were and what they had, we had a kind of a baseline of what we wanted to be able to support, what we were trying to support. And our standpoint from a company perspective has always been to not try to lock our customers into a specific vendor. If they want to change their strategy for whatever reason, we should be able to support them wherever they be able to go. So I think when we started getting into some of the like financial industries and they started to tell us like, hey, we have this platform. I think it was actually back when it was still Pivotal Cloud Foundry, not even Tanzu, is when we actually started to support this. We saw that they had a lot of these inside of those major banks and things. So that was where we initially started to go. And so we kind of took from our customers that we had where their strategies were going to try to kind of align to that with our company strategy to make sure that we have the support for what they're actually doing. And even throughout the last 6 or so years, I don't know how long ago it was when Pivotal got bought, but we've really just been able to see that support stay and continue, even though that there is this big shift for everybody trying to move to the public cloud or the private cloud. These Tanzu services are really staying around. I think it's because of the innate security that's built into Tanzu itself, but also then the ease of use from an application or deployment standpoint. Those types of benefits that we see from TAS, which are interesting to me. And I was one of the lucky people that got an opportunity to work on those Tanzu application products. Nice.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's one, the strong point of Cloud Foundry and, you know, relation to TAS is it is secure by nature. Now, one of the things, and I think, you know, Nick might have some of this, you know, he was a customer as I was a customer before. The platform itself is very secure. I would say one of the weak spots is there's nothing built into the platform innately to make sure that the application's running securely, to do kind of that endpoint that we were talking about, look at threats. So seeing that, you know, Okta Security and others are coming in with the third party inclusions into this is really making this a more robust platform. I know that David's going to have some things that he wants to say on this about the application, you know, vector of attacks coming into the platform. But the fact that, you know, not only are we a secure platform by nature, but bringing in these extra platforms gives the, you know, what do you say, the feel good to the users that, yes, we can accommodate the application side security as well. And, you know, David, Nick, I'll turn that over to you guys to kind of think of, you know, talk about that a little bit.
I think previously, you know, my experience as a customer is that us able, you know, working together with Aqua to have that unified security story, right? Because, you know, your other, you know, I'm assuming, right? You secure and manage a lot of other type of infrastructure, and plugging TAS into that whole kind of, I don't want to say single pane of glass, but like a more consolidated pane of glass to get all those benefits, I think it is immensely valuable for the enterprise customers for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of plays into the shared responsibility model too. So like the TAS is worried about the platform and the services that they provide, but what the customers put on top of that is up to them to be able to secure and make sure that they have been following through the processes and not only just providing the runtime security, which is what we've been talking about mostly here, but also hardening that environment from the beginning. So being able to implement into like CI/CD processes, be able to have acceptance gates so that way if certain levels of certain thresholds of vulnerability severity get broken or things that are configured as root, those types of things aren't getting moved through and getting deployed eventually, which opens your attack surface wider to those potential threats.
It's actually worth pointing out on that part, though. From a Tanzu point of view, Aqua and Tanzu have more than just a TAS relationship. You know, we have, you know, if you look at our TAP and the build services, as well as hardware, you know, the Trivia, you can't negate how much impact Trivia has had in the industry. And the fact that hardware itself is such a large non-TAS tool, but it's integrated, we ship it with Trivia out of the gate. But also TAP has the integrations. But we didn't talk about that other part in the last tile, which is the actual scanner tile, which does, you know, the build process within actually the containers. That's actually the process of scanning those actual containers and having that inventory and maintaining that piece of the supply chain within TAS itself is also one of those other pieces.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great segue. And Nick and Nikki, I don't want to steal your thunder here, but this is actually where I did my first CF push command from. So when I was actually playing with this scanner for the first time. So
tell us all about it.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was actually the original tile, so the full platform tile redeployed, but it's ultimately the same thing from the scanner perspective. So we installed it. I had the platform. I was going in. I did a git clone of a CF Hello Worlds application, and then I pushed that and deployed it right there. And then basically we would have, right at that point is where we would basically have a build pack and a decorator that was installed there to be able to do the analyzation of the application as it's getting staged. So when I hit that CF push command, it basically goes through all the steps to build the application. And then at a certain point, the Aqua skin steps step in, where it goes and it rips it apart by layer, analyzes all the packages for the vulnerabilities, you know, the basic scan stuff. And then basically will take the assurance policies or the minimum security requirements that we want to be met to see if we broke any of those thresholds. And it will give you the high level results back right there in the command line. And then if you had or had not chosen to enforce that acceptance gate, it would either fail the stage or it would deploy and you'd have a running application for our enforcer to go monitor. So that was my first CF push command. It was CF push hello world, CF hello worlds. Nice. And played a bunch around with a bunch of other stuff, trying to test out our product, just be familiar with Tanzu more than I had beforehand. So that was really my first experience with Tanzu altogether. Was, and actually a lot of platforms in my experiences, we integrate with it. I need to go figure out how to use it because my customer wants to use this. So I'm like, all right, let's hit the ground running and let's see how this works.
Okay. So we'll take a quick question from the audience. So it appears that Aqua Security is proving to be a significant innovation. What impact will integrating Aqua Security have on the load of TAS components?
Yeah, great question. So I'll take it twofold. So I'll say it from the build perspective and then from the agent perspective as well. So from a build perspective, it's kind of negligible as far as a build additional build time. I think it's a necessary slowdown, because if you're just looking for solely speed, I think there's an old saying that goes, slow is accurate and accurate is fast, something along the lines of that. So if you're taking the time to be able to make sure that you have your applications that are being built cleanly, deploying them into a clean environment, there's less of a cycle that has to happen when there is an issue in real time or in runtime to be able to go backwards to have these developers modify these applications when they've already moved on. So if we can be able to do that in line, I think that adds a valuable aspect to that build process. And from an agent perspective, from the enforcer, we actually leverage eBPF. So in at a baseline, so that gives us a really frictionless link into the kernel of the containers to be able to do the process tracing that we're trying to be able to uncover from like the attack vectors that or behavioral indicators that our threat research team is loading in there. And from a general perspective, we see like a less than a 1% overhead or uptick in overhead from this enforcer being deployed into the environment.
Similar to that would be naturally if you're running enforcer for is it run for each instance? So is it a sidecar? So is there a memory requirement that goes with that also? So say a customer is running, you know, 1,000 containers on a VM, how much impact could it have from that point of view?
Well, so it would just be one enforcer. So we do have a sidecar option if we wanted to. Generally, we usually see that in like the containers as a service space, not necessarily when you have access to the host itself. So that would just be the one enforcer per host. It does basically sits in front of the requests to the host and then be able to audit everything that goes through. So even regardless of the density of that host, we don't really, it won't affect what the enforcer is actually able to do.
Well, and to kind of dig in that a little bit more. So when we're talking about when this tile gets installed or this service gets installed through a Bausch add-on, are we talking it's only going to get deployed to the Diegos? It's not getting deployed across all components of Cloud Foundry or TAS, right? It's going on to the Diego just to monitor the containers, or am I wrong on that?
That's correct, I believe. So it would either be the Diegos, but also into the isolation segments as well. So if you had any of those, we have the ability to go and deploy across all the isolation segments. That way you have the full coverage of all the applications that you're running.
Where does the scanner, is that instead, this is part of the build service, does that actually have a temporary instance that comes up, or is that actually get deployed to like a build service or build?
It's a build pack actually. So if you have it, when we install a tile, it installs a build pack into your list. I forget what the actual name of the list of build packs is, but it installs right in there. So then that way, when you go, there's a little configuration that you have to do with the tile as well. But basically, it sets the staging environment variables to be able to connect back to either the SaaS service or the local deployment that you had, and then based off of the link back to the console, it does an analysis based off of what scope you defined when you set your policies. So you can be able to make a difference between like lower environments to higher environments, or you're working on just one single application. You can configure it to just scan on an individual app instance across or across the whole organization or the space that you're working in.
So as a build pack, do developers have to make sure and call that out in their manifest or part of their CI, or is it get picked up automatically regardless of the stack that they're using in the deployment?
So it generally gets picked up automatically, but in certain cases, they can be able to reference it specifically inside of the manifest, just depending on how they're working through when they or what workflow they're trying to follow during that build process.
Okay, cool. All right. So, you know, from so David, from a CISO standpoint, you know, we're always concerned about, we've heard Deshaun, we've heard, you know, the Spring team talk about CVEs and how to address those. From a CISO perspective, what are your thoughts on, you know, the inclusion of something like Aqua Security into the platform, the benefits that you have, and, you know, basically how it can make people sleep a little better at night knowing that their applications are secured?
Like anything in security, and I'm sure Deshaun and everyone else mentions this all the time, it's on that layered approach. It is really the different layers of things you're going to have. And TAS itself provides the base VMs and the building blocks to build the platform on top of it and the ability to run applications. And it does, you know, Nikki, you and I, we probably should have a whole conversation just around the inherent, like, runtime security. Like, we have the file integrity monitoring. We have the, you know, some antivirus stuff to look for some malware scans inside images and those sort of things. There's other things within it from inherently in the platform, like the ASGs and runtime security. But realistically, if you want to understand really what's happening in an application, there's the layer of the container itself, you know, from the building of it and the actual running. And you'll hear me also talk at times. I'm a huge fan of another one of our partners that gets actually into the application. We have another session with them and talk to that. That's actually within the actual application code. It's like a WAR file you'd attach. So each layer, there are different security things you look at. And in the end, it becomes, how do you analyze what's happening? Like, you know, monitoring of the platform. Are you monitoring for invalid logins? Are you looking to make sure you've done the upgrades of the latest version? You know, from the platform, that's one thing. Aqua, what it provides is that container. Is the container, again, on the latest version? Are you getting the CVEs and the vulnerabilities patched on those, which would be coming from us and TAS, you know, making sure you're consuming them. So there's two sides of security. One, the policy saying you must upgrade and you must do things, and the actual, you know, did you do it and validation of it. So Aqua provides that validation in the build process, but even more so that runtime side, the actual running application, having the knowledge of, you know, what it's supposed to, you know, what database is it supposed to connect to? You know, having your application suddenly connect to your mainframe when it doesn't normally do that. You know, how do you know that if you're monitoring outside of the application space? So that's one of the things that Aqua provides, is that visibility of what's allowed for each application instance. And then looking for those things is doing that are risks. So if we go back to like Log4j, one of my favorite attacks on Log4j is, Jake mentioned, you know, in-memory attacks. You would attack Log4j and overload the Java with your own Java function, and then start running your own code.
Hold on. One of your favorite attacks. So that's a neat way for a CISO to put things. One of my favorite ways for things to get attacked is this way. That seems like an interesting statement, David.
XZ. Well, I mean, it's the fact of the way you approach security. You have to recognize the skill. Like XZ, the XZ attack, I need to sit down and finish this blog post, because it truly was an ingenious, well-engineered, well-thought-out. You have to appreciate the scope of what this small one person, small team did, and realize the scope of the attackers are teams of thousands in nation states doing these kind of things. So if you don't recognize the elegance of how well things can be exploited, then you can't protect against them. So if you look at like the idea that, you know, Log4j, there's so many different ways you can be attacked, but one of them was you could take your own Java function and actually overload in the memory of Log4j and then say, go run my code. So, for example, you can install a scanner and have it scan your network, which is one of the tests we did with one of our tests. So if you had someone injecting something into application to attack your business, and you're not using ASGs in the platform because ASGs are hard, you know, anything you do with egress or ingress firewall rolling is, in my opinion, extremely important, but it's so hard to do because, you know, developers change things. You know, they might change your database. You might have a failover. And if you didn't account for that, then you're broken and tracing it's hard. So actually, when you have the Aqua side, you actually have that one, the metrics and knowledge. You have the patterns and trends over time. And Jake, we didn't even get into the idea of the forensic work you can do with the data that is gathered. There's a whole, you know, when an incident does happen, you know, actually going back and replaying and seeing what the application was doing within that container from a service running, the process details, the file system, the network, that actually turns into something you can actually really make actionable and making a better, tighter, not just TAS, but a platform and everything it runs on. So that's a huge part of it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And actually, one of those things, like when we have those forensic findings in a container environment, some of those things are kind of irrelevant in certain cases, because when you have processes that are running that are not necessarily even malicious, they are normal processes that your container is going to run all the time, but it's just as noise inside of your forensics logs that is causing, that it's obfuscating, I guess you could say, from the actual attack. So part of what we do with the enforcers, when we have a certain severity of finding, let's call it a level 3 finding, that is when we'll be able to give you an alert that says, okay, this is a behavior that we have witnessed in the wild. This is something that maps to this MITRE framework, this MITRE tactic, this technique, or multiple therein, and be able to then give you the rest of those forensics. So it could be like a network connection that was made to a IP address that isn't necessarily malicious by itself, or a sleep command being run that isn't necessarily malicious by itself. But when you get to attacks in progress at a container environment, the average container life cycle is only 12 hours. So why would a sleep command be running for 7 days? That's something that we've seen out there in the wild, where they're just trying to wait for a specific trigger, like a container runtime being present, in order to then actually execute its attack, which is something that we've actually seen in the wild. And I've had examples pulled from Docker Hub, for instance, where there were real images that people were pulling that was like a classic typo squat. So like Alpins instead of Alpine, they just missed one key, but it was did exactly what Alpine did. But when you scan the image, it had no critical, no high vulnerabilities. There was no malware signature detected. But when we actually executed the container, there was a cryptocurrency miner that was deployed right away. There was a known malware signature from the coin miner itself, connections to a known mining hub. But none of those things were found until we actually deployed the container. So those are the types of things where that forensics information that, like you said, David, would be able to come in, even though some of those things might not be the attack itself, but then they will lead you to the stepping stones to get to the point where we have that level 3 event, and then you can be able to trace backwards. So I guess the TLDR there is a lot of the events and the forensics that you're collecting in a container environment is going to be a lot of noise, and it's going to be a lot of things that aren't necessarily actionable until you have an event that you need to be able to go back and see what connections were made because of the implications that your applications are actually doing.
Well, you know, you bring up two things in that statement you made. So first, I kind of want to go back, you know, the layered approach. It's one of the things I truly like about a platform. As you had mentioned, Jake, you know, the platform concentrates on getting the application out there, wiring in everything else. Aqua comes in and does the security. That kind of separation of responsibilities there, I think, is very important. I'm a firm believer if you try to have one thing do everything, it does nothing well. So being able to offload, you know, those specialized tasks like security and things of that nature out to, you know, a partner tile who specializes in that and really knows the impact has a greater advantage to me than doing it singularly as a platform. And you do separate that those responsibilities. So your security guys can be taking a look at the tile, the outputs, not your platform engineers, you know, so much, and allow you to get a better feel of what the platform's doing, what your applications are. So I think that's huge. And that's one of the great benefits, I think, what comes with Cloud Foundry is the ability to have these partner interactions. The platform provides the ability for you guys to come in and wire in. And from the platform perspective, it's a, you know, touch once, hit all when it comes to applications. And that's huge without having to deploy specialized, you know, scanners, enforcers out on every piece of hardware.
Right. Yeah, that actually made me think of another point there is where security tools like Aqua or similar, they generate so many alerts and events that it becomes extremely hard for a human to be able to look through, to be able to prioritize effectively, which comes into a lot of the automation and a lot of the different types of alerting that we can be able to provide, where you don't necessarily have to have a single like webhook, for instance, it's dumping all of our vulnerability scans, which I've had customers that have had upwards of 9 million vulnerabilities on any given day, which do not ask me to look through a list of 9 million things, please, because I won't do it. But then we can be able to scope down so that way we're only sending alerts to specific development teams when there's an incident or there's a critical vulnerability found on only their asset. So they're not looking at one stream or one Slack thread that has a message going off every 30 seconds, because everybody's going to turn the notifications off for that and start ignoring it. And then when a critical incident actually happens, then everybody's got to scramble to be able to backtrack to what they actually find. So what we're trying to do now instead is just send it directly to the development teams. And that way you can have multiple instances of the same integration, but that's down to like the thread internally. That way there's only five or six people that are involved in this dev team or in this development team that they can go work on this application or fix this issue, or if a runtime event happens, be able to then go and triage whether or not you have protection in place or we're actively blocking things, then you can be able to go to respond if you're traditional IR teams or however you respond to incidents like that in real time.
Yep. Well, and I know, you know, me and David have talked about this. Nick knows it as being a customer. You know, within the platform, we do get that vomit of logs. Love to say the words vomit of logs. We log anything and everything that the platform does. There's a lot of security aspects you can take from those logs, but there's difficulty in knowing where to go and what logs to look at. And, you know, having something like this that kind of pares that down, separates that responsibility out, it does make it, in my opinion, a little bit easier to use. And, you know, Nick, any comments? I mean, you've seen the logs that we've had to try to tear through to look at security from a platform. Thoughts on that?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, yes, logs in general, especially when you're trying to, I guess, certify a platform for, let's say, a industry standard compliance thing. Like, I don't know, maybe like PCI. Maybe I did that before in the past life for a company. I don't know. But having tools like this to help be in your tool chain or whatever to say, and then help present those to the auditors and say, this is how we, you know, meet these requirements, you know, in addition to like what we have with the platform, we have these additional things to help meet standards X, you know, whatever compliant, you know, I forgot the way they phrased it, but there were like certain like line items, like this is how you meet this thing. And we'd meet this and then we could add, you know, this as well, or like we have multiple factors to protect against this. I think that is key. And then, yeah, having, you know, something to work in a I guess a more smart fashion to help kind of you know, clean the noise out a little too is definitely valuable, because yeah, you could get something, it could just spam you with alerts, and then you turn the alerts off, and then you miss everything, and then it's like well, why'd you get the thing in the first place type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah,
thinking of alerts, Jake, is that something that I've not talked to Aqua in a couple months on some of the roadmap, but I know that monitoring things within applications is something y'all have been working on. Is there anything that y'all are doing that you can hint about on anything in the actual app space? I know that one of the conversations I get involved with a lot with Aqua and customers is, you know, imagine you have a couple hundred or a couple thousand Diego cells running, and you have all these containers running. That application conversation gets really complex. So I don't know if there's anything that you've been working on or seeing that kind of makes that conversation a little easier.
Yeah, well, so this isn't, I don't even know if this is necessarily a new feature, but it's boiling down to our application scope. So it's kind of like it's been in the product for as long as I can remember, but it's where these application scopes is where you define your group of assets. So let's say it's a image registry or a specific host group, or you could even scope it to specific Aqua components. So like specific enforcers that you have deployed inside of a specific Diego cells, however you wanted to group that together. That's how we're defining an application per se. You could be able to do it that way. And when you take that application scope, you would feed it to a response policy, as we call it. So it's like a if this then that policy, where we're looking for specific triggers from that application scope. So if, let's say, we define the application scope and then we set our trigger to be anytime that we have a runtime incident on any of these assets. So it could be like one of your specific hosts that has 1,000 applications running on it. You could be able to say, okay, anytime one of these 1,000 applications has a runtime incident that we define, we would then send an alert to this integration instance. And it could be a broader term or a broader channel, or it could be a more narrow channel. But you also could take those scopes and narrow it down to just one specific container or one specific application name. That way you're only getting alerts to these specific things. So it's really customizable up to you, however broad or however narrow you want to be able to make these notification streams happen. It's up to you from that standpoint.
And it goes back to one of the bigger conversations, though, it really is nothing has zero CVEs. No matter where we go, no matter what you talk about, nothing has zero. And it really comes back to why that layered model again, you know, the platform, what we provide in the platform is that continuous, always updating process, not just for the stem cells, but those build packs and every part of those containers. I'm super excited about where Taz is going with some of the build pack future and how that's integrating. So I really think that's an interesting breakup of how we're looking at the way we approach the application security story and the layering of both reporting and observing what the risks are pulling that threat feed data. That's one thing that I'm really interested in. Maybe we can dig into that one day is what do you already have in that threat feed? Because that's, again, as a security person, the stuff you're pulling from there is making real the things you're seeing happening inside of a container. So that's a really interesting conversation between those two. And Nikki, we're gonna talk about vomiting logs all the time. That's mm-hmm. the reason you have so much burnout on the security teams. Is there's so much happening, and there's a fear. You know, there's always a saying that the attackers only need to be right once. Defenders can be right 100% of the time. So it's near impossible. There's this pressure on security teams. And I can recognize it in our own SaaS offerings. You know, the idea that we have to watch 24/7 globally deployed infrastructure for attacks that are happening upon us. And we depend upon our partners as well as our internal tools. So I think it's so many layers of conversations and the different people are involved. You know, like how do you mm-hmm. as a developer, you know, we're and maybe we can get Deshaun on one day. We can talk about the whole trichotomy of like security, the platform and the developer and who really talks in the reality of a business environment. You don't really have a security team calling up a developer saying, hey, we found this in your vulnerability. It's this whole process around it that makes it the old traditional throwing things over the wall, very burdensome. And I love the Aqua's in the middle here. They're trying to talk to developers, but selling to CISOs, where it's a really great layering of I think our approach in Tanzu and the security approach of Aqua in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back again to the layered approach that we were talking about. Everybody's responsible for security. It's just at what level. And, you know, going back to one of the Alpine story that you told, Jake, it's one of the things that personally kind of scares me. You know, my brother from another mother, he talks about the internet. It is the compendium of human knowledge. You can go out there and you can find anything you want. This includes software that you can download, Bitnami, Docker Hub. You know, you look at things, MySQL, for instance, there's 30,000 some odd images out there that people can download. How do you know which one's right? And it's very tricky using your Alpine story. You can scan this one. It looked like it was clean, but once you run it, there's an attack there. So having that layered approach and things that can come in and look after the fact, you can do everything right and still be wrong. And that's why you got to have these tools on top of your platform, on top of your application, why you got to be putting a security first mindset out there to make sure that you don't fall victim. Nobody wants to be in the news, right? Nobody wants to be in the news as the latest company that got hacked or released a bunch of private information. So. All right. So we're going to go to another question. So this is Deshaun and Nick, this is like the third time that Deshaun has asked about Raspberry Pi on these episodes. I think he gets one question in. So we may have to change this from Cloud Foundry Weekly to Cal Foundry Weekly, you know, parentheses and Raspberry Pi. But is there a light version of Aqua that I can run on my ARM64 containers, you know, Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, absolutely. So
I want to throw out to Deshaun, you actually have Taz running on a Raspberry Pi. I would love to see that episode. Anyway, back to Roger.
Yeah, let me know how you do that because I'm interested in starting a Raspberry Pi server myself. But yeah, absolutely. So we actually support or sponsor two open source products. Shrivi, I think a lot of people are familiar with. That's our open source scanner. But then its sister, Tracy, with T-R-A-C-E-E, is actually the engine for our enforcer. So it's the eBPF process tracer, if you can get it from Tracy. And basically, that's kind of the light version. So that'll go in and it'll give you, it has the same behavioral analysis feeds that are going into our enforcer. It's really the engine to the enforcer, like I mentioned. So that's probably the light version, I would call it. And it definitely supports ARM64. So you could be able to put that there.
Excellent. And we'll make sure that we get those links. We'll put them in the show notes, you know, at the bottom when this episode's over. His follow-up is Aqua for Karifi. Are you aware of Karifi?
I am not, but let me Google it real quick and become an expert in 5 minutes.
I'll give you a 10-second spiel or whatever. So Cloud Foundry Karifi is the latest iteration within the Cloud Foundry Foundation to kind of bridge the worlds of Cloud Foundry and Kubernetes. So Deshaun's mentioning that I believe, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Deshaun, that he'll run Karifi on Raspberry Pis on top of a Kubernetes cluster and get that kind of similar CF push experience there.
Gotcha.
So maybe that's where we can, you know, plug in some of those, you know, additional ARM64 support there. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how much room he has left on his pies, I guess I would imagine. or how, I guess, the better question is how many Raspberry Pis does he have? because he could have a lot and run a lot of things. So,
right.
Yeah, but that's kind of where he's coming from there.
Okay.
But Jake, I think, Aqua supports Kubernetes. So that's one thing that's done there. You work in our build service. So if you're building with build service, you can have Aqua scanning on build and release there. We use Triviarity and Harbor, so you're using that. But then if you're using Kurifi, they wouldn't have the Opsman tiles. So you wouldn't have our tiles, but there are Bosch releases of the Aqua components. So you could install those into that. So if you want, we will have to get Jake talking to Deshaun and see if we can make that work. It sounds like he's going to demo it in Cloud Foundry Day, North America. So,
And that's an interesting question, Jake. I mean, so, we've been talking the tiles that are coming out on TAS. Do your instructions also include the Bosch add-on releases and how to do the Bosch release for these, or are they strictly just TAS-related tiles now?
Well, so the tiles are only in TAS, but we do have Bosch commands to be able to do the deployments. So that was the traditional way that we would have the additional enforcers spin up when we had the management plane tile. So it would do the deployment of like the server, the database, the gateway, which is our service components for the enforcers to connect to. We would still have to go do individual Bosch commands to be able to get the enforcer to deploy to all the Diego cells. We would have to do manual install of the build pack to be able to add that into the scan steps. So absolutely, we do have Bosch commands to be able to do the deployments, and we have the artifact tags for being able to make sure that the enforcers can get deployed there.
Excellent. All right. Well, and since it was brought up, I'm going to go ahead and state it. So, Cloud Foundry Day, May 15th, Nick and I do want to make a little bit of an announcement. So we are going to be closing out Cloud Foundry Day with a live episode of Cloud Foundry Weekly. Nick, you want to give some more details?
Yeah, it's going to be Cloud Foundry Day live at Cloud Foundry Weekly live at Cloud Foundry Day, New York City. So yeah, we've got some special guests and confirmed now. So I just want to double. We have two very large Cloud Foundry users that are going to join us. I'll keep it a surprise until we update the schedule officially. So keep an eye out there. We're gonna attempt to do a live stream, like a conference session and live stream all at once. So hopefully y'all can join us. If you can't make it to New York City, we'd love to see you in person. So we'll have a live physical audience, a live virtual audience, and like live guest speakers in person. So this is gonna be many firsts for everything, but I'm pretty excited about it. Come check us out at Cloud Foundry Day, New York City. If you're around and you're in the Cloud Foundry scene, you should definitely try to make it to the event. There's a lot of really great people from the engineering side, the community, going to be there. The fee is I think only like a mere $50, and it will provide you two meals in New York City. So I think it essentially pays for itself at that point in terms of food costs. So I think you should definitely check it out. And then Deshaun is also going to be there as well. So maybe he could be a special guest as well from the audience, because I think we're going on right after his talk there. So, we won't forget about you for sure, Deshaun.
Yep. And again, Nick and I are going to be out there with our GoPros and the selfie stick waving out there, trying to get everybody CF Push stories. So, we plan to try to put all of those together. And we're going to make a video that we're going to put out on the channel. But yeah, we would love to talk to all the customers out there. If you get there, come look for us. We're going to try to have some stickers made up that we can get out there for, for people to take. But we want to get your stories, and we're going to try to see if we can't set a record for the most CF Push, stories that are out there, while we're at Cloud Foundry Day. So come find us and look for us. We'll be out there with GoPro. We may hit you with a stick just to try to get you to come be a part of it.
Yeah. In a nice way. And then I do we David, did you get your CF Push story?
I did not. No.
Oh, so we can't end the show before we get that, because that's a mandatory requirement for sure. So
my story, I was just finishing working at the bank, as you mentioned in the beginning, Nikki, my little bio there. And I was in the midst of like, where do I go next in my life? I was like, well, I can keep being CISO. And I was talking to a couple of West Coast companies, ran to Mark Croft, for those who remember Mark Croft from Pivotal days, and decided to give a shot of actually applying to Pivotal to go work on the field CISO side of GCXO team. So my first ever CF Push was me installing Cloud Foundry for the first time in an interview, trying to explain it as an executive presentation. So I'm presenting it to like executive people as I'm installing it and doing a CF push. And I'd never done, I did like one prep before I flew up to New York for it. Mm-hmm. So it was live. It was like basically like you. It's did it live in front of Arnie, in front of Mark, and like I got the job, but I'm still here, so I must have done a good job.
Yeah.
And it impacted me gratefully though. I mean, it is, as somebody who's lived around infrastructure and cloud since before it was cloud. I mean, I started my first ISP back in 94. It blew my mind. It really, I mean, if we're going to talk about the first one, really it changed the idea of what it means to take some code and get it running. And yep. No matter what we've done in Kubernetes, Kurifi is kind of cool, but it's like, we just need to remember how revolutionary just that concept was. And I'm not a developer. I'm a hacker. You know,
you mean is.
Yes. Still very much is. Yes.
Don't you talk about Cloud Foundry in the past tense. I will find you, and I have a special set of skills, David. So Cloud Foundry Day, are you going to be there, DNZ?
I have not actually looked at it. I don't see why I couldn't be. I just need to double check and see if I can fly up.
So how about you, Jake?
Well, I'm looking at the events page right now on Linux Foundation, so I think there's a good chance that I'll get over there.
Great. Yeah, nice.
And we'll have to meet up. And I think it's going to be a great event. I was at the one in Heidelberg, Germany last year. The event sold out. It was great. It was great to see customers and folks from the different community perspective. However, we did suffer the lack of air conditioning or proper air conditioning in the European environment, where it got pretty hot in the room in the space, because it was an all glass situation. They had AC in that building, but it was really struggling. But they had a rooftop which we could escape to from time to time. But it's a great single track approach. We have some great talks lined up. You can see it all in once without having to, you know, miss different events or pick and choose. And then, you know, come for the hallway track, meet up with everybody, talk to your peers, you know, share those stories that you can't really share any other way. So, and of course, close the day with Cloud Foundry Weekly. So, anywho.
So, Jake, one more thing. You're going to be at the RSA conference in San Francisco, May 6th through 9th, booth 1835. So, you got questions about Aqua Security, you can come see Jake in the South Expo Hall. Anything you want to say about the RSA conference?
Yeah, absolutely. You got any questions about Aqua? You want to see what new stuff we've got going on, especially around Gen AI? I don't think David meant for the conversation to move into that direction, but I actually just luckily enough got enabled on our new Gen AI capabilities right before this started. So nice. Lucky timing there. But yeah, any questions,
follow up.
Come get some swag, and we'll see you there.
Cool.
We're going to have to do a follow-up and actually give a demo of both the AI and TAS, but then Gen AI Aqua security around the consumption of it. That'd be a really interesting real live demo one day.
100%. Yeah, be able to get Gen AI and security at the same time. So yeah.
If we say Gen AI five more times, it's going to bolster our YouTube performance tenfold. So and we'll drop Taylor Swift app too. So anyway, but yeah, if you haven't seen episode 2, Jake, check it out. It's dives into our Gen AI stuff with TAS and Cloud Foundry, and maybe you could see how we could use our solutions together guiding everyone down this Gen AI path in a safe and secure way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I caught the first half of it, but I didn't finish it.
Yeah, but if you need any more details, I'll happy to jump on and share and see what we can do together. All right, let's see here. We're close to time. Do we have any other comments or things to say before we sign off?
While we're waiting to see if any more comments come in, Jake's LinkedIn post, you got any questions, you're not able to make a conference, you're not able to make Cloud Foundry Day, leaked out, you know, reach out to him on LinkedIn. And the same for David. So here's his LinkedIn. And again, we'll provide all these links in the bottom, in the show notes after the episode goes into the channel. So make sure you reach out to them. David's good for any question security. And I know from experience that he loves to geek out on security, and if you let him, he can talk to you for hours on this. So feel free to reach out to either one of those guys. And let's see, we got a couple comments. Nope. Deshaun telling us that we did a great job. Always appreciate it, Deshaun.
Yeah.
And we'll tell the audience, thank you for the audience being here. You know, again, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you hit the bell. Be notified of when the new episode's coming out every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Nick, I'll leave it up to you before we sign off.
Well, I'd like to thank Jake and David for coming on the show, being our guests this week. I think it was a great conversation, and we look forward to how we can continue our partnership together with Tanzu and Aqua Security. And and then also, don't forget, we do convert these live streams into podcast episodes, and you can grab those at cloudfoundryweekly.com or your favorite podcast player of choice, and listen to us in podcast form too. I think we've covered all the bases here, Nikki. Are we ready?
So.
All right, yeah.
All right.
And we'll end the show.
CFI.
Yeah, CFI.
All right, see y'all next week.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Cloud Foundry Weekly. Feel free to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or check us out at cloudfoundryweekly.com. Thank you.